everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Music, Money, and Life podcast. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by howtolicenseyourmusic.com. If you are a musician and you're interested in learning how to license your music in television shows and films, visit howtolicenseyourmusic.com. Today I'm speaking with a Canadian-based country artist by the name of Rory Gardner, and Rory has a lot of ideas about how to actually make money playing and performing music. Rory has some really cool insights into ways you can sort of do a better job at the business side of music. Rory, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Rory.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rory, for my listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you, give us a little background into, you know, what you've been up to musically.
I mean, my story may not be as different than everyone else's. I mean, it's I started with an indie band back, you know, heck, 10 years ago, and then I, you know, everybody was doing that 10 years ago, and then I gave it up. I did country music. And I've been pursuing the country music thing ever since then. We got three albums out of Nashville. We got some radio play. We got some songs licensed to specific advertisers and TV. And you know, and we're just going from there. You know what I mean? Supplement time. Sometimes we'll do some cover gigs, private events. And lately, I've been incorporating you know, a bit of comedy and storytelling into my stuff. So we're leveraging, you know, casinos and theaters and stuff like that.
Nice. And I know you make a full-time living from music. This is all you do. So I'm interested in finding out how you're able to do that. You know, there's so many struggling, aspiring musicians out there. And I think the dream for a lot of musicians is just to be able to make a living from what they love doing, playing music. So I know you're doing different things. You're performing, you're licensing, but can you talk a little bit about how you're able to actually fit all these different pieces together and make a full-time living from music?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it is a little outside the box thinking. And I mean, a lot of people, there's like a stigma with musicians or artists in general where, you know, you get the term starving artist in front of it. And it's just because it's income that's not necessarily steady. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so the reality of it is, I think, you know, 90% of the population is living paycheck to paycheck. Just because of their spending habits, and you know, no matter how much you make, you're gonna spend it all. So, yeah, you've got to set systems up in order to start making your money work for you. And that's exactly what you know, any sort of investment will do. Just get an appreciating asset and let that work for you, so you don't necessarily have to work yourself into an early grave playing music.
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually the last podcast I did. We talked about this exact topic. The idea that when you're self-employed, if you're a musician and you're working for yourself, you really have to be careful about budgeting and setting aside money, and because there is this sort of inconsistency to the income you make. But of all your sort of different revenue streams, what's been the most consistent for you? How are you actually making the majority of your money?
Well, the consistent one is always going to be shows. So, I mean, that's like what I consider the job part of the music. It's what I go out and actively do. The funny thing about that is it's only a fraction of my overall musical income. I kind of do it because the entertaining part is my favorite part, more or less. Yeah. And the reason I told you earlier is I got into the comedy side of it, just to put shows together and then increase my billable rate, I guess, for the income coming in there. But you know, once we have songs written, you know what I mean, we'll pitch to radio, and if they don't if they like the song, great, we'll get a bunch of spins. But if they don't like it, it goes directly into a box that I call my licensing box. So then I'll pitch that to all the contacts I have in you know, in the licensing world, and I could talk about that, but that's more of a your thing. And you do enough talking about that on your podcast, so we'll leave that today. But exactly. But the moral of the story is, no matter where the income comes from, whether it's licensing or the gigs, instead of going out and buying guitars and stuff right away, I'll try to put that into an asset, let's say like a rental house, for example, and that rental house will actually grow on its own and create another source of income in which I use to buy those guitars or amps or things like that. So it's basically putting all your money from the music income into a machine that kind of helps you work together.
So what you're really talking about is just being smart with the money you make, as opposed to not even blowing it all, but as opposed to putting it directly back into your music career. You're actually you're doing rental properties and stuff. So are you buying properties and renting them out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. This isn't even a music thing. This is just like a life thing that everybody should be doing, whether you're an accountant, a plumber, or a musician. And how I got into it was, 10 years ago, I thought, I was 24 at the time, and I'm ready to go on world tour. And I figured I didn't want to come back broke. So I ended up just buying a house with all the money I had back then, what little money I had back then. And then so at least I'd be building equity while I was gone. Anyway, the world tour never happened. Everyone's got stars in their eyes when they're young. And but at least, over the course of time, I rented the house out to tenants, and that asset built. And that's when I learned the concept of just putting your money in the right places and letting it grow for you.
Yeah, no, I think that's really smart. I'm 40, and it's really taken me, really just over the last couple of years, I feel like I've finally sort of got a grasp on money and how to manage it and how to not blow it. And I think what happens with a lot of musicians, like you said, they kind of have stars in their eyes, and there's just this assumption that they're going to make it, quote unquote, at some point, right? So when you're young, you're not really thinking about just being smart over the long haul. So I think that's really smart. But I wanted to back up. I'm curious. You mentioned you do comedy stuff as well as regular shows. What kind of comedy stuff are you doing, Rory?
Well, it's funny. I do that to reach a different demographic. I find as we age, I'm 34 now, and when I was in my mid 20s or even late 20s, we'd be hitting the cover scene hard. So we'd be in clubs up till 2 a.m. singing Bon Jovi songs and stuff like that, and it was a lot of fun. And now at 2 a.m. things starting to kill me, as I I've got a couple kids now.
Yeah.
And it's funny, the fans we grew the fans we met back in those days are now I still see them, and they're the bar owners now, or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
It's funny how things change that way. And so the comedy thing is basically just reaching a different demographic of people who don't necessarily go out to bars. It's more of a older, more affluent crowd. So when you get that kind of crowd, especially a sober crowd, they're more likely to buy merch and really pay attention to what you're saying when you're performing, so you can really work a room that way.
But are you doing like comedy music, like songs?
Exactly. Or? So what I did was I jumped right into it, and just for 2 years did stand up comedy, like on the side of the music thing.
Oh,
you know
cool.
what I mean? I wanted to learn how to construct jokes, how to work on timing and things like that, and then just recently I've kind of combined it into a 1 hour show that now I'm pitching to talent buyers and things like that. And it's just, you can sell that much higher than hire me to play 3 sets of covers at your venue kind of thing.
Wow, that's really cool. So you do stand up too? How do you still do stand up, or are you not doing that anymore?
I'll do stand up to work on new material. So I have a pretty good grasp of what's funny and what's not, but I mean, I never know how a crowd's going to react to anything. So if I have a bunch of new material, I'll go out and I'll test it out, and if it bombs, it bombs. If it doesn't, then I put it into my set.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I've always had a lot of respect for comedians. You know, I think it's one thing to get on stage with three or four people or even by yourself and play music. Like, that can be pretty intimidating, but I would imagine, like, telling jokes is probably even scarier.
It's the worst. Let me tell you. Because, you know, playing music, I mean, you could be the worst singer on the planet, but people are still going to clap after your song out of politeness. You can't tell a joke that's not funny. No one's going to laugh out of politeness. You know what I mean? It's going to be crickets in there.
You have less to hide behind, right?
You have nothing to hide behind.
Now, that's awesome. Cool. So let's kind of switch gears here. So, like, one of the things you mentioned is you kind of have some different music business hacks, some things you've been able to do. One of them is you said you got a free tour van, brand new. How were you able to swing that?
It's the same. It's sort of the same hack as it was just thinking outside the box, and so. Every time I come up with, I'm looking at all these things that I've done in the past, and I'm just kind of accumulating them, and I'm starting to put them on my site just to help other people in the same sort of situation kind of develop their thing. I've got this site, musicsuccesssystem.com, and it's just full of little stories like that one, for example, how I got a free tour van, which sounds weird off the cusp, but it's basically, you know, at the time I was driving the current vehicle, and we needed something else with a little more space, and so I had saved up maybe $6,000 or something like that, and I had my current vehicle. I could probably trade it in for like $4,000, so I had like $10,000 I could just throw down on a new whip, which is pretty tempting to do. But then, you know, cars, and you know what they say about cars, they depreciate. So a few years from now, that car would be worth nothing, and then I'd be left with nothing. So what I did was I took the $10,000 and I put it into, I bought, I went to the bank, got pre-approved, put 5% down on a $200,000 townhouse, put tenants into that townhouse. And now, that particular house was making, you know, maybe $300 a month above all the expenses and things like that. So I was making around $300 positive cash flow. I had no money left because I blew it all on the house. But I went to the dealer and leased a brand new ride, no money down, no interest, for exactly $300 a month. So now I'm driving a new car, no expenses, and, you know, 10 years from now, the house has doubled in value. So it's, you know, you're sitting on $400,000 on a small decision, like, what am I going to do with this $10,000?
So let me make sure that I'm following you. So you bought this townhouse, and from the money you made from renting out the unit, you leased a vehicle.
Exactly. So, I mean, you got to pay your, you know, there's mortgage expenses, there's, you know, hydro, or you got to pay the gas, and then whatever expenses there are that comes with owning a house. But on top of that, the rent that the tenants were paying me, I made an extra $300 a month off that. That $300 went directly towards the payments towards this newly leased vehicle.
I think that's really good advice. I'm imagining, though, that maybe there's people out there listening and they're thinking, Rory, Aaron, this is all good, but I really don't want to become a landlord. Do you have any other sort of ideas apart from real estate?
Yeah, I mean, I got that idea from someone who did almost the same thing with a storage unit, for example. They bought a storage unit in their hometown, and they just rent that thing out. You're not necessarily a landlord at that point in time. You're just handing the keys over to someone and collecting a check. But, I mean, if you talk to your local banking advisor or someone like that, I mean, they can set you up with stocks or anything that pays dividends, monthly. I'm not a big fan of those, but it's definitely an alternative to someone who doesn't want to get into real estate. And I don't love dealing with tenants myself, but I hire a property manager, and for a small cut, they'll handle all the problems for you.
Yeah, no, I think that's really smart. Have you ever heard of, do you know who Eben Pagan is? He's a marketing guy, does a lot of internet marketing, but he teaches courses. He's done really well online, but like his whole philosophy, the way he explains it is that you don't want to like hoard money itself, because money constantly loses value. He explains it as like money. It's like, imagine there's a bucket full of money. Well, there's a hole in the bucket. So the idea is that you take money and you put it into things that actually appreciate in value, like real estate or like the storage unit idea. So I think these are all really, really smart ideas. But obviously you have to, maybe not everyone is in a position to purchase real estate. Maybe they just don't have enough capital saved up. Maybe they have bad credit. So I'm just trying to think of other sort of suggestions we can give people.
That's just it. I mean, you never know what your options are unless you find out. So, I mean, let's say, you go to the bank and say, hey, can I be approved for a house? So they'll either say yes or no. And if the answer is no, ask them, what do I need to do in order to get approved? So they'll be like, well, you have to perhaps make this amount of money per year in order to be approved for this house. Now you have to set your goal, your music goal, to, create another X amount of dollars a year in order to be able to afford that house. So, so when you set your music GPS, as they say, to a higher goal, things just manifest, and you put it in the universe, and maybe more gigs occur that year, or things just happen, I'll just stop it right there before I get too wrapped up in it.
No, I think that's all great. Let's get back a little bit to how you actually make money from music. How many shows do you play a year, Roy?
I would say it used to be well over 100, but now it's 60, 70.
Okay. So you're doing like 60 or 70 shows a year, and I know you're doing some licensing stuff as well. Do you sell a lot of your music on iTunes and sites like that?
Yeah. I have like I said, that my thing is that basically write primarily for radio, and when that doesn't work, the stuff goes towards licensing and things like that. With the iTunes, it's all country music. As of late, I tried to niche my music a little bit. As I said earlier, I have a couple kids, and I started writing songs as kind of a mute button for them, set them to silent kind of thing. Yeah. And I ended up creating an album out of it. So I actually have a country music children's album now. And I market that in a completely different way than traditional music. So it's, instead of radio promo and things like that, I'm literally being interviewed on like mom blogs, or like I do guest posts on things like that. So it's like anywhere where there's, like new moms or people who want to buy kids music is exactly where they'll find me for that particular product. And that's been selling fantastically, just because I've really focused down onto one particular market, and I hate it hurt.
That's really cool. Yeah. I was speaking with a musician a few days ago who does all children's music, and she's been doing this. I'm going to try to bring her on my podcast in the near future. Her name is Daria, I think is her name, but she does all children's music, and she's been doing it for years. And she just she makes a full-time living from doing it. She's found her niche. And so I'm always really intrigued by people who are able to kind of find these little niches that, maybe not everyone's sort of thinking of, but they're able to make it work. That's really cool.
Yeah, just something new. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm going to be a children's performer. I don't think I can handle that full time, but it's definitely a nice change from the day in, day out.
Cool. Well, listen, I know you have to run, so I'm just going to ask you a couple more questions. I'm curious though, why do you kind of segment radio and licensing? Why not pitch songs to both radio and licensing simultaneously?
It's not that I guess it's not that I separate them. It's just I'm trying to establish that just because you hear a no from one source, there's definitely other avenues for that particular song. A good example is my first album ever is a title track off that was called Break Free. Mm-hmm. And I pitched that to radio. Everyone on the planet hated it as far as program directors goes. It was like a fan favorite. It's a fantastic song. I still think it is. But I thought it was a big fail, so I just kind of put it on the shelf for a couple of years. And then I get this random call out of New York City. This ag company wants to license this song. And, I was like, we'd like to license your song for X amount of years, X amount of spins, all these different networks. Click. I thought it was a prank call, so I hung up. But then they called back.
You hung up on them?
Yeah, exactly. And anyway, they called back and we worked it out. And that song has been going strong for, two or three years now. And it's paid for. Well, actually, what happened is that song is literally paid for another house, which I call the Break Free House. And every penny from that place goes towards A, music expenses, and B, to specific charities.
Nice. So you were actually able to make enough money from that one song through different licensing opportunities to buy a house. Is that what you're saying?
That song, exactly. That song was the biggest fail at the beginning of my career, but it turned into the most successful song to date, and exactly enough to buy a property with.
Wow. And where was it licensed to?
It's licensed to a pharmaceutical company, and I have a confidential agreement signed with them, so I can't tell you who it is. But they, it's all over North America, and it's really funny. I see it on network television here in Canada, which is neat. I mean, I took the family to Florida last for about a month or so earlier in the winter. And I'm getting an oil change, and I'm sitting there in the waiting room, a bunch of guys just waiting to get their car back, and all of a sudden the commercial comes on the TV in the waiting room. And it's one of those situations where it's like you want so badly, like turn to the guy next to you and say, "Hey, I wrote that song."
That's mine. You should
sure
have.
They don't care. Exactly.
But, I would tell them if it was me. So you heard it in what? It was in a commercial?
Yeah, it's attached to a few different commercials for the same product. But it's just neat. You can travel all over the continent and see your commercial in different places. It's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I have someone pitching one of my songs to a potential commercial opportunity as we speak. So my fingers are crossed for me.
Yeah, I mean, commercials are great. I mean, I've got some TV as well, but I honestly don't. I don't think they pay as well as the commercials. You know what I mean? I got one song in this hunting and fishing show on Wild TV. It's basically the theme song, and that's weird. I mean, like literally the opening to the show is like a bunch of ducks being shot out of the air, and I feel terrible being associated to such graphic scenery. But I mean, it pays the bill.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is with theme songs, I mean, I don't think, I know this is the case with theme songs and commercials, they're played repeatedly, right? So it's like every time the commercial or the show airs, you generate another royalty. So that's, that gets pretty exciting.
Yeah. No,
that's awesome. Well, listen, I'm sorry to cut you off. I know you have to run, though. We kind of had a little delay in getting started. This is all really good stuff, Roy. Thanks so much for coming on and doing this. What I'd like to do, what I always do at the end of every podcast, is I feature a song from whoever the guest is. Do you have a song that sort of comes to mind that we can use to close the podcast with?
Oh, good question. Why don't I send you I'll send you the song "Break Free." It's the song that's all over those commercials. It's the song that I thought failed. It's the song I wrote an ebook actually called "Break Free," that just, you know, tells the stories of how I overcame all that failure and things like that. And you can get that on my site as well.
And what is your website address for people to check that
the
out?
Website that has all the tips for the music investing and this and that is musicsuccess.com. Musicsuccesssystem.com.
Musicsuccesssystem.com. And your website, if people want to check your music out, is Rory Gardner, GARDINER.com. And so this song that we're going to end with is called "Break Free." This is the song that bought Rory a house. Rory, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
Sitting in my car, traffic jam. People don't realize who I am. Every new place I don't want to be. This 9-to-5 just ain't for me. Oh, it's honk as the rain pours down. Gotta find a way to turn it upside down and break free. No one gonna take that away from me. I'll break free. I'm gonna pack it all up and just leave. You know I gotta break free. Yeah. Gotta be getting on down this road. Loosen my tie, take off a load. Run to a place where it can't be found. Out in the summer, the only sounds are cold ice cubes falling in my glass. Gonna wear a t-shirt that says "Kiss My." Break free. No one gonna take that away from me. I'll break free. I'm gonna pack it all up and just leave. You know I gotta break free. Take business trips just to get paid. Gotta get home, but the flight's delayed. The man in the mirror, no, it ain't me. Gonna loosen these chains, yeah, I've got to break free. No one gonna take that away from me. I'll break free. I'm gonna pack it all up and just leave. You know I gotta break free.